Fred, hello.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
What's going on? Fire?
Ron is dead.
How you doing, Stanky Lane?
High five from everyone.
Took it to the limb.
I have a horrible foot fetish.
Do you?
Let's go, Red Sox.
I'm Leo.
Let's go, Red Sox.
Hear me like a bow, bow, bow.
Go, Red Sox.
Hear me like a bow, bow, bow.
Won't it, but yeah.
Stop the hammering.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Yeah, Keith is laughable. Wendy works such a jerk. I miss Chucky Perks. Wish he would quit his gig. Wait, here's a thought to hire a ring at the Burger King. Keep on some, don't come up prepared. I'll be here. But when he leaves here, he'll never be a household name. Unless someone poops on a red walk in. So now we sit in the studio spitting takes. Till we're sidetracked by Gets of Snakes. Toilet blew up in someone's face. Now it's super late for another break. 98.5. What is to hire you? Nobody knows. Back to the greatest day bumpkin. You know where the old man was humbled, then crumbled to something. I know about you. You went to St. Paul's as a private school. Dork, a podcast just for tools. That you can't find on iTunes. Brother, what you gonna do? The Hulk ain't the only person. Worried that your situation will worsen. Sitting on your couch all day and jerking. Lots of questions, all uncertain. Wrestling's real, the moon landing's fake. These are two examples of the place it takes. Not a lie. Keeps a guy who thought he should get football to try. Before he left Hobart, he was riding benches. Kinda like Zobo without the stenches. Keeper Madness at 9:50. But remember, it's my show. Ow! Don't turn your mic on, cause it's a waste of time.
Keith is an ass.
Don't waste time unless it's sports up headlines.
Keith is an ass.
Don't turn your mic on, cause it's a waste of time.
Keith is an ass.
Don't waste time unless it's sports up headlines.
Keith is an ass.
Touch your wrist.
Ass hat.
Think I can't rap?
Ass hat.
Keeps going down.
Ass hat.
I'll take your crown.
Ass hat.
Five of Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich, and that is the sound of one of the very few times I've been awestruck on the show. filling in for Fred this morning is a guy that, I have to be honest, I didn't expect that out of him. He's otherwise known as the Sports Vulture here on the station. When things go bad, he is the guy you tune into to, well, I guess stoke the fire of your hatred and anger when it comes to teams losing. Is that fair?
This is a wrong day for him.
No, exactly. This is going to be a true test of Adam Jones's.
Everyone won yesterday.
Of his personality, because it's a pretty good day.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if
Red Sox make a signing, the U.S. hockey team wins, the Bruins win.
That's what we need it right here.
But
that is Adam Jones. And I'm saying this with like all sincerity. Is that Adam contacted me. That was during 98 Mile, I think 2 years ago. And he said, because he was going to record with me. And Hardy was recording some people. I was recording some people. Adam said, all right, I'm going to do Bombs Over Baghdad by Outkast. And I was like, all right, dude, sure, knock yourself out. I just started laughing. Like, dude, you're going to absolutely come in here and try. That's one of the fastest, outside of like Busta Rhymes or Twista, that is one of the fastest raps as far as just words, like words per minute, is Bombs Over Baghdad. And so Adam comes in, you know, just all unassuming, and he's got his like little notes in front of him, and I say, all right, here we go, you ready? I'm thinking this is going to take 45 minutes to record. And Adam walks in and nailed that in maybe 2.5 takes.
No.
Like, I'm not kidding you. Like, he got through the first 50 seconds of that 1.5 minute thing without taking a breath and just shot it right out. And I mean, Adam can attest to this. I was like, okay, now we're talking. And he goes, okay, I think I messed up one line. Let me do it again. And he went and finished it. And then he just, for good measure, went back and recorded one more line. And that was it. Like, just nailed it. It wasn't one take, but it was like 2.5. And he got that whole thing. That was a mind blower, to be quite honest.
I channeled my inner hatred. I could just picture Wallach like just making fun of me the next day, and I was like, nope, not gonna allow it, Wallach.
That's right.
Not gonna let it happen.
That's kinda like when I recorded my rap for Zolak, you know, just a lot of hatred involved.
Well, those are the best ones.
Spews it forth.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about, you know, the classics like Gresh versus Felger.
A lot of hatred there.
A lot of
hatred.
Like Gresh walked in and didn't even have a song. And I'm like, what song would he do? Doesn't matter. roll tape.
That's true.
All right. And he just like started just rapping this thing that he had come up with. And I just put a random song to it. I don't even know which one, what song I picked, but I just, I'll put a beat to it. You got it. And then he left like legitimately pissed. But that was one of the all time good ones. So Adam Jones for the next 2 days will be filling in this morning. And I was thinking about the Red Sox news and with Adam in here and how most people are happy this morning. And I was wondering, maybe I should juxtapose it with someone like Dan Roach. You know, have Dan Roach and Adam Jones kind of go back and forth because you guys even went to, against each other in 98 Mile?
Roachy, yes. Roachy smoked me in the second round of 98
Mile.
That's right.
Yeah. I do remember that. But I mean, you want to talk about, like, personality-wise, the antithesis of each other.
Right.
You know, he's known as, like, everything is awesome.
The
like,
warm front against a cold front.
Yes, it is. And, right. And so I was wondering whether I could have him just come in, you know, maybe for a break or something to talk with Adam, even though I think Adam, honestly, probably thinks the signing is a good one. I mean, there's things to nitpick, obviously. I don't want to speak for you. But
give him room now.
I do like that.
Give him room.
But then I thought about it. So Dan Roach, because he didn't go to spring training, there's this weirdness there that we talked to him and, you know, he obviously doesn't want to come on and he doesn't want to make anybody look bad. And I understand that. And he's a good guy. You could tell he's crushed that he didn't get to go to spring training. That's what he loves to do. I mean, this is one of the main perks of doing the job that he does for him is being able to go down to spring training. He lives for this stuff.
Right, because you can see so much baseball while you're down there. It's not just... not just the Red Sox and all their you know, their training, but you get, I don't know, what other teams are down there? The Yankees are down there. The Rays are down. Like,
sure.
He can take in, like, it's Cape League baseball on steroids. Like,
right.
You can take in every training camp down there possible.
And he gets to pal around with them and
that's
stuff.
True.
You more access to them. Yeah, a little jib ribbon and stuff like that.
I remember when we were down there in March in Fort Myers and
right.
I cracked that joke that you kind of laughed at. Remember that?
Yeah, now we're buds.
Yeah.
And now we're best bros forever. On top of that, there's apparently a really nice Applebee's down there that Dan Roach just likes to crush. On a week, his expense report when he turns it in must be like $14 a day.
Yeah, honest to God, it's like a salad for dinner.
Yeah.
It's like the Applebee's salad.
That's
dinner for him.
I'm gonna splurge on mozzarella sticks.
But I wanted to get him in, and then I thought about it. I was like, I don't think we can still get it. Like, when is the statute of limitations on when? Like, how long we have to wait until Dan Roach doesn't feel awkward coming on the show?
Oh, it's going
to
be a while.
I told him we weren't going to.
I know.
Like, talk
I was,
to him
I was
about
there. I
the
was there for
incident.
That conversation. It's going to be a while. It's going to be at least a couple of weeks.
No, honestly, Adam. Like, when do you think would be like he would agree to a time to come in? Because I told him I understand it's a big deal. I don't want to make anyone look bad. We just want to have you come on and talk about the Red Sox. You know what? Just come on and like do one of those spring training poem things that you do that gets everyone all excited. I love it. To be honest, it's one of the few things that legitimately gets me excited. That's one of my few nerdy moments where I sit back and go, you know what? For a second, I'm going to get sucked up into this whole the magic of baseball crap. And
right.
Then, you know, we'll get angry about it later on. But for one day, it's always kind of cool when he's able to just kind of make us feel for a moment that baseball is the savior of all things and spring is coming and all that crap. But when is it okay to have him on now? Like, when do you think he's going to finally say, all right, I feel comfortable coming on the show?
How many steps are there to grief?
That's a good question.
You know?
Right.
Is it like five?
Yeah.
Six?
Yeah.
He probably needs like a week for each stage.
See, that sucks. Like, does the season have to start officially so he doesn't have to talk about, do all the reporters have to be gone from spring training?
Oh, maybe. You can't have him on after a loss. If you get to regular season, you can't have him on after a loss.
No,
not first. Eventually you could.
Do we got to do like an opening day type of situation where we've got Dick Flavin, you know, reading his poem and stuff?
Yeah,
and
See... you could wear like an old timey baseball outfit.
No, that's already been done.
Grow
out to charity event for the old timey.
Grow out a mustache.
Sure. Right.
Recite Cap Anson stats to him. I'm sure he'd like that.
Cap Anson.
Something along those lines. Yeah.
See, I know who Cap Anson is. That's the scary part about that.
So I guess what I need to do is I just need to put out a feeler and just say, listen, whenever you're comfortable coming on, we want you on like the first day that you're comfortable.
See, what if this is like the first stage of like just a, you know, like a superhero movie, like a villain turn? Like this is where Roachy now, he starts hating baseball.
Not a chance.
He starts hating the Red Sox writers.
Not a chance.
It's an origin
story.
Hating the Red Sox team.
Yeah. No.
This is where it all began.
No, the correct phrase, I believe, is heel turn.
He has time. Yeah, heel turn. He has time now. He's got all this time in the spring where now all of a sudden it's the hate is building within him. thinking about all the things he's missing out on, just kind of jamming his fist into the table every time there's like a pitcher PFP down on the field that he's missing out on, something really exciting. Yeah. You know, they're playing Pepper out there and he can't be there. And now he's channeling all that inner hatred. He could be a different Rochie right now as we speak.
He's looking at all these like lesser reporters who haven't earned their stripes, who don't know, like, you know, what jokes hit, and like some like 20-year-old that Nesson just hired that's going down there.
Cub.
Eating at his Applebee's.
Standing there just to read a teleprompter, and he's like, I can ask real baseball. I can make these guys smile.
Some Nesson kid working for minimum
wage. Applebee's. The Applebee's gave the Cub reporter my booth.
Squinting at the camera. What is he doing?
I mean, you know.
It's a good story.
If you've ever been to Graceland, there's a room that's got a bunch of TVs with bullet holes in it because Elvis and his friends used to just get drunk and shoot the TV. I bet Dan Roach has got a couple of those in his home.
Makes sense.
And just like, but like with his fist, like he just looks and sees like 21-year-old newly hired yeoman who's going to be gone and probably end up, you know, over that Nesson just put up there, just reading a teleprompter. That could be me!
That's right. Some kid who graduated from Syracuse just like he did. You know?
Right. And he's sitting there at home.
Good point.
Like just screaming at the sky. And then, you know, he sees my text and goes, I can't do it. I cannot throw these guys under the bus.
You know what? I think if you bang away on him hard enough, he'll break.
But I don't even want him to talk about...
You know what I'm saying. Stop it!
Well, I mean, it's that kind of relationship we have. But I don't even want him to talk about any of the spring training stuff anymore. Like, it was interesting. Now we know the story. We understand why he's not down there. And I feel bad for him. Just talk baseball. Let's just talk about what's happened. Talk about the moves they made. Talk about, you know, the J.D. Martinez side.
But he's not down there, so does he really know?
I don't care. I want Roach's voice. I want him. I want his personality. He's the only
Jones
man who can make me
facetious.
Feel personal.
That's like what all the beat writers are saying to him. They're like, Roachie doesn't know anything anymore. He doesn't come down here.
Sure.
He's like one of those radio guys in the studio. They don't know what goes on out there.
He's losing cred in the booth. Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
Yeah.
All the writers now can look down on him for not being there.
Do they still let him into Fenway?
I know. It's a good point.
I don't know.
That's a good question. See, these are things that I want answered.
This is the heel turn. He's like, do I get my good seat in the press box? Am I allowed into Fenway Park? Mm. Do I get my parking spot?
Poor Dan. My heart breaks for you, Dan.
Dan, come over to the dark side. We got plenty of room over here.
Are there snacks? Is there Applebee's?
No, there's nothing. I root for the heel turn out of him, though. That's what I'm rooting for. I hope he goes super hateful.
Not
spiteful.
Chance.
Roach has been pissed off before, but what was it about? Like, was it about, like, his... Like, he said his life sucks. I think it was because his like, kids were growing up or something.
Yeah, something like how he hates his life now.
Oh, that's right. Oh, here it is right here. And I don't even remember what brought this up. Probably just like talking to Fred too much.
I thought I would enjoy my life as I get older. I hate it.
Okay, all right.
Because Fred brought up the fact that one kid was in college and another kid was leaving. And now he didn't have a chance to hang out with his buddy. You know, his son is his buddy. Harry's his buddy.
Well, it looks like Dan is going to be in a dark place for a while. I'm going to put out the Roach signal. I'm going to say anytime you feel, the minute you feel comfortable coming on the air, we won't even talk about the spring training incident. We just want you to talk the old ball. Just talk about the old ball game, all right? Tossing it back and forth with your dad.
How many?
I can't mention his dad. Fred does that enough. You know, tossing the old ball back and forth with people who aren't your dad. And we'll have a good time on the air. You know,
How many dingers is J.D. Martinez going to hit this year? Huh, Roachie? You want to talk about that?
See, it would be a delight to do that. Like, on a day like today, it would be a delight to have that. Because Dan Roach, this is his happy day.
I know you're not down there, but what's David Price's stuff look like?
Right.
How's it translate to TV?
Stuff you've watched on the monitor.
Sure.
Yeah. We can't even bring that up because that reminds me he's not there. You can't do that.
Well, we do have Jared Carrabas. Yeah, Jared Carrabas will be on with us at 8:20. It'll be good to get. He's obviously very excited. He'll be on with us at in the 8 o'clock hour. Also Billy Jaffe talking about the Bruins and Ryan Dunleavy. This is going to be I'm looking forward to this. He's the guy who talked to Devin McCourty this weekend about Malcolm Butler's benching, and it's really the first time that anyone's really spoken in detail about who knew what. I mean, you had a little bit from what's his name?
Eric Rowe
after the game, but really nobody expanding on it. So this is going to be a It's the whole thing. You would think I'd be over this Malcolm Butler story. I'm not. I'm still fascinated. I want to know more, and I'm surprised that we haven't had more leaks up to this point. So Ryan Dunleavy will be on, and so much more. The Adam Jones, the Sports Vulture, in studio on a day where I am very interested to find if he can find many negative things with what's been going on over the last 24 to 48 hours. So we will talk about everything that happened last night.
Admit it. Toucher. It turns you on.
And Rich.
Every mother's dream.
Toucher and Rich.
I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
95, the Sports Hub.
Recapping what you missed with Toucher and Rich.
Five of Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. Got Adam Jones filling in for Fred this morning. And after getting absolutely shellacked on Saturday, the Boston Bruins, they bounce back.
High slot now, Brody. Try to return it for Gaudreau. Might have a breakaway for Marchand. He'll barrel into the slot. Forehand, back in. He scores! Brad Marchand, from about 130 feet in, came in on a breakaway, and then Drew Rydick out and shoveled it five-hole for the game winner.
All right, I was starting to get nervous after Saturday. They were going to start looking back to when the eventual Bruins losing streak started, and we would have referred to what would be known as the pucks and paddles curse, because the first game after our big charity ping-pong tournament was about as bad an ass-kicking as it could get, so thank goodness the Bruins bounced back. Like they have been all season long after a bad game, with an exciting win over the Flames, 2-1 in overtime. The scoring started with the pucks and paddles champion himself breaking a six-game scoreless streak.
Far circle, Pastrnak. Poke checked away. Pastrnak scoreless in the last four. He's got the puck. Fires. He scores! David Pastrnak stayed with it. Far circle. Chipped it just inside the far post by the blocker of David Rydick. 1-0 Bruins.
On top of that, there's times where you look at Tuukka Rask and just are in awe. Like, in the overtime yesterday, he was an absolute monster. Stole the game for them, turning away several big chances for Calgary. Riley Nash made a nice defensive play in the slot, leading to that filthy breakaway goal from Marchand. He goes five-hole, game over. Here's Cassidy afterwards. Obviously very happy with where the team is right now.
Pleased. I was pleased in Vancouver offensively. I mean, we generated, I think we had it at about 27 plus about 8 or 9 off nets, so it was probably a season high for us. We just didn't finish that well, and then tonight we didn't have that many, but we certainly, like you said, generated some breakaways, or we made good plays. Spoons was a good shot. Pasta made a good move. You know, the kid was up to it.
Well, and Brad Marchand, he's also feeling that the team has been firing at all cylinders as of late.
Yeah, he was phenomenal, especially in the third. In overtime, they had a lot of really good opportunities. He played phenomenal. Got to give Nasher a lot of credit on that last goal. He made a phenomenal defensive play to kill that play and get it up. So, great job by those guys.
All right, so an interesting theory that's being floated around, and Adam, I saw you actually emailed this last night, and I've heard a couple people say this too, is that over the last several weeks, a lot of the talk has been about Patrice Bergeron and how he is somebody who should be considered, at least in consideration for the Hart right now. And I mean, his play has been fantastic. It's been the best offensively. He's on track to have the best offensive year that he has had, which is saying a lot, seeing he's had some great years here with his team. But then you look at what Brad Marchand's been able to pull off. Why is his name not being thrown out there?
Okay, so I mean, I think that's a legitimate question. I think the answer is people don't like him.
Sure, voters don't like him. Yeah,
I think. I mean, I'm not telling you that's a good reason, Wallace.
PK Subban won the Norris. I mean,
PK Subban's not known as a dirty player.
He's an antagonizer.
It's also antagonizer and dirty is different.
It is, and I also think the Norris is a lot different than your league MVP, right? I think a lot goes into your team and your makeup and. I don't know. I don't think that's fair. Like, I think Marchand, what did he finish in Hart voting last year? Seventh, sixth or seventh, something like that. Mm-hmm. So he's gotten votes before. I just think it's odd that Marchand has 55 points in 44 games.
Yeah, yeah.
Bergeron's at 52 and 52. So they're both excellent. And I'm not saying Bergeron doesn't deserve the traction that he's gotten for it. I'm not even sure he's the Bruins' best Hart Trophy candidate. I mean, I think Marchand is more of a game breaker, more electric. I know they didn't miss him. They went 4-1, I think, in the five games he was out.
Yep, they did.
So that may work against him too, but I think he should be getting certainly more traction than he has been, and my guess is it's because people don't like him or people think he's dirty, cheap. they still don't think he's a world-class player, maybe, you know, given his pedigree.
I don't know. Top line on the Canadian Olympic hockey team.
I'm trying to think. I think he should be their candidate. I think he should be the guy.
Here's the problem. They both play on the same team. I mean, they can't vote for both guys. If they were separate teams, either would have a great chance, but I think you got split votes here.
Well, let me ask you this.
I think one will take votes away from the other.
Let's say they were both to finish with exact same records, same points, everything. Who are most people going to vote for?
So in that case, I would give it to Bergeron.
Yeah, yeah. Patrice Bergeron would be the guy.
Because of the defense.
Yeah, well,
that's part of it.
I mean, the defense is part of it. Okay, but I'm trying to even say take that away. Just if when people go to vote, they feel better when they vote for Patrice Bergeron because he's the guy, like he's like the epitome of what you want in a hockey player. And I think that that's something that when you write down who you're going to go for, your conscience is a little cleaner than a guy that has been suspended for giving a guy a concussion, who's had a history of dirty play. I think that that's something that unfortunately works against Brad Marchand, no matter how good he plays.
True. If they were even.
If they were even.
They're not. Marchand, points per game, is having a much better season. He's defensively responsible, too. You know, he helps drive puck possession like Bergeron does. So, I don't know if they were even. If they were having the same kind of year, then sure. In a tiebreaker, I'd probably vote for Bergeron, too. They're not.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's one of those situations where at least the conversation is happening. And it was funny, when I saw your email, that might have been the third time this weekend that I've heard somebody speak about that. Because now it's getting to where you can't ignore it. You can't ignore what Brad Marchand's been able to do with this team. And on top of that, listen, either way, we're all winners if you're a Boston Bruins fan.
Well, yeah. And that goal yesterday.
Yeah. Awesome. Just awesome.
I mean, that is, like, to Wallach's point. Like, anyone who doesn't think Marchand is a world-class player when he's been on the top line at, what was it, the
World Championships.
Whatever the heck it was last year.
Yeah.
Your fake Olympics.
whatever they call it.
He was on the top line for Canada. You'd imagine he'd be on one of the top two lines for Canada in this Olympics if the players were allowed to go.
Yeah.
World Cup of Hockey, I think is what it was called.
Yeah, whatever it's called. The not Olympic tournament.
I mean, that goal that's a world-class goal.
Yeah, it is. And on top of that, by the way, coming from the sports vulture, how about this?
I think we're
way too positive this morning.
Yeah, but really, it's just a sneaky dig at Bergeron.
That's right. Well, it's a backhand. Compliment. Yeah. I like that.
You got to compliment Marchand to take a dig at Bergeron.
Nobody takes a shot at Bergeron either. So this is creative.
Yeah. That's right. Well, by the way, speaking of U.S. Olympic hockey, I mean, it's that you're not going to enjoy it as much as when you had like the superstars out there. But I'm surprised at how little I'm watching U.S. men's Olympic hockey. I know Donato's been like...
Well, he's the only guy reason to watch if you're a Bruins fan, and he's got four goals in the four
games.
And
he's been amazing, including last night. He scored another one.
Yep.
So, I mean,
two.
Another thing, everything's coming up Bruins. But are you finding it harder to really get invested in U.S. Olympic hockey?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Without a doubt.
I mean, if they get to the semifinals, I haven't watched a full game all the way through. If they win tonight, they're in the semifinals. Mm-hmm. And then I'll start paying
attention. Who are they playing tonight?
Czech Republic.
Okay. All I know is that I was fascinated this weekend. Did you see, I don't even know the official name of it, but it is the half pipe, the women's half pipe skiing. Did you hear about this one woman? I have the whole story, who qualified just by showing up to all of the events, because you have to be one of the top 30 in the world to qualify for the Olympics. And so this woman went to every event, the ones that other like serious skiers would skip. And many times there would only be like 24 or 25 people who would show up. So she just by default would become like the 26th ranked.
Nice.
And what she would do every single time is she wouldn't do any tricks. She would just go up and down and up and down. And just by not falling, she would in many cases not be in last place. So she ended up qualifying for the Olympics. Did you see her run?
No. For people who can't see it, I'm watching her hand movements, so I feel like I get it. But
her run was awesome. So she starts off, we have to play the audio of the play-by-play commentators. She starts off at the top and just rides to the top of one side, rides to the top of the other. Rides. It was like a nice
leisurely. What country does she represent?
Oh, well, it was Turkey. Even though she was born in America, somehow she got into the Turkey, like the Turkish team. And she goes,
she can qualify.
Left, right, no tricks. Does no tricks and just does a leisurely slow thing down the slope and finishes and just smiles. Gets like a crap score, but it doesn't matter. She's in the effing Olympics.
She's an Olympian
for doing nothing. Like she found a loophole and just started going to all. And there was one tournament, like one of the big qualifying ones for her that was being held at the same time as that there was one where all these people were paid, like a superstar tournament. And so she gets into the other one that none of the like stars were at and qualifies. So she makes it to the Olympics and just shows up and does nothing.
Well, even the Jamaicans had to take it seriously down a hill.
It's the equivalent of making the Olympics and doing like the doing like the 100 meter or whatever, and just like literally jogging,
kind of leisurely just stroll,
like a leisurely stroll down there while eating a donut.
Walk. Yeah,
it's the best. I have to pull the audio of the guys doing the play by play because they're trying to make it sound spectacular. Looks like she's just warming up.
I think she's got it. About to go 360 Misty here,
and then she never finishes. She never does a trick. And they're like, oh, looks like she's saving the best for last, and never does a trick.
That's great.
At the end, she just slowly turns and kind of like, backwards, goes into the finish line. You're like, whoa,
nice.
What did we just see? All right, well, I got to pull that audio just a minute. When we get back, we will talk about, of course, the big signing from the Red Sox yesterday, the very combative press conference between Mr. John Henry and the press, and so much more right after John Wallach's headlines.
98.5, the Sports Hub, Toucher and Rich.
All right, 98.5 is Sports Hub, it's Toucher and Rich. Okay, I was just talking about that athlete from Hungary, who just showed up yesterday at the women's halfpipe and just leisurely went up, down, and finished. And everyone's like, how the hell did this person make it to the Olympics? Okay, so real quick. So her name is Elizabeth Sweeney, and she is an American. But you know how, so like the top 30 people in the world end up, I think there was only like six slots per country that can make it into the Olympics. But I think eight of the top in the world are from America. So two didn't make it. But the way it works is that this woman was able to ski for Hungary because her grandparents were from Hungary. And there's a loophole that says that you can, I guess, if you have heritage in one of these different places, you can end up skiing for their team. So what she did was, because it's such a limited amount of people who are in the women's halfpipe around the world, that she just showed up and qualified in all these different tournaments, and it was either in last place because less than 30 people were there, or she just didn't fall. And so I posted the video, and it's just phenomenal.
I think you shortchanged her.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point she kind of went up and, you know, kind of almost like a little 360 in there.
That's what you kind of have
to. She got about a foot of air above the top lip. She kind of screwed up and almost fell down because she's running out of momentum as she goes. She can't even really get all the way to the top of the half pipe.
Yeah.
So at the end, she just kind of went backwards through the finish line, kind of gave a little wave.
Just
at the
kind
end.
Of a wave and then got a horrible score. It says, this is from the NBC Sports, because the field for women's half pipe is not very deep, so many World Cup events had fewer than 30 athletes. So as long as she showed up and dropped in for a run, Sweeney was guaranteed a top 30 finish.
Brilliant.
And at least a few points. And that's exactly what she did. She was able to use very basic runs to get herself into position to qualify for the Olympics. She wouldn't necessarily attempt any tricks, but she wouldn't crash either. Quote, she would compete in World Cup events consistently over the last couple of years, and sometimes girls would crash, so she would not end up dead last, one of the judges explained to the Denver Post. Which brings us to the performance yesterday. And once again, she didn't even clear the lip of the half pipe. She didn't grab any of her tricks. She didn't spin anything behind a 180, but she didn't fall.
There was one nice little spin I saw in there.
The bottom of her skis never went above the
lip. No, definitely not. No, no, not even close.
At one point, I don't even think the top of her skis on one of the one of the things up didn't even go over the top.
There was a time she didn't reach the lip of the pipe at all.
She's so smart.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Because we're all sitting here like, oh yeah, I could be an Olympic curler. No, I mean, that one's probably harder to qualify in.
Okay.
I feel like we all have the skill set to be an Olympic curler, but she gamed the system and figured out the easiest way into the Olympics. Oh, it's brilliant.
Without a doubt. Okay, so is this the audio of the people doing the play-by-play? All right, listen how polite they're trying to be here.
Elizabeth.
Yeah, good to go. All right.
Sweeney. From Hungary, out of Oakland, California now. 34th in the World Cup. 13th in the half pipe at Secret Garden earlier in the year. What can she deliver on here in Pyeongchang?
Liz Sweeney dropping in, trying to get into this right wall for a nice, just getting up to the top of the wall, going for these grabs, the safety grab you'll see there.
The safety grab.
And opting for another, just cruising up to the top of the wall, showing the judges she can make it down this half pipe clean. For the alley-oop spin down at the bottom and to the left, and then a nice cruise 360 to switch, trying to show that she has a little style down at the bottom.
Yep.
Yeah, like nobody's clapping when she gets down there. Yeah. I just, why is nobody saying she's doing nothing? Yeah. She's doing nothing.
The guy says alley-oop spin. What the hell does that mean?
No, they did. She did nothing.
Alley-oop
back
spin.
Back forth. Alley-oop spin is when you go up, you have to go back down.
Oh, yep. Is that what that is?
So you have to turn.
Okay.
Like, you got to go up and you got to turn. That's not an alley-oop spin. That's a, I would literally fall on my ass if I don't turn.
What do you call it? A safety grab?
Safety grab. Yeah.
It's a safety grab. I feel like that'd be like the extent of my skiing abilities is a safety grab.
Yeah.
Because getting down the half pipe, I feel like is, that's... That'd be a challenge for me in its own right.
Well, listen, all I know is that she's obviously very happy. She lived her dream, got to be at the Olympics, and now she's a folk story. But you know who's not very happy this morning?
Who?
All those people at Dunkin' Donuts who told Dave Dombrowski not to do anything.
Oh, that's a good point.
Crushed.
Yep.
Crushed, because unfortunately for them, the worst happened. The Red Sox agreed to a 5-year, $110 million deal with J.D. Martinez. The contract reportedly includes opt-outs after years 2 and 3. How do you console those poor human beings just talking over coffee? He's just a normal Joe hanging out at the Dunks. Ugh. Well, J.D. is coming off a massive contract year with a career-best 45 homers and 104 RBI in 2017. Now, according to Bob Nightingale, they said that J.D. originally wanted $210 million over 7 years. The Red Sox offered $100 million to raise it to $110 to seal the deal. I love it. There's not a lot to not like about this deal.
Front-loaded, too. Me, that's the best part of
it. No, it's great. The Red Sox go from having the worst home run total in Major League Baseball this year to having an elite hitter in the rotation. A couple thoughts on this. Number one, it seems like the Red Sox were the only bidder, and to Dave Dombrowski's credit, he figured it out pretty quickly. I mean, that is one hell of a discount you're getting from what the guy was asking for. So good on them for doing the research and figuring out that maybe most of these teams are waiting for next year's free agent class where you have a ton of big superstars coming out. I thought that that was a pretty good deal for a guy that was asking for ridiculous money. They called him out on it, and they end up winning. Number two, Martinez probably likely to get a lot of his playing time for the Red Sox at DH. Your outfield's already pretty strong with Benintendi, Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr., so... Looks like Hanley Ramirez is going to be spending more time on first, right along with Mitch Moreland. I'm trying to think of what the lineup would be. You got to think that you would go Betts, Benintendi, Bogarts, and then J.D. Martinez?
I don't want Bogarts hitting third. I mean, that's neither here nor there. I mean, Bogarts hit, what, 10 home runs last year? Yeah. I don't want Bogarts hitting third.
So what do you do? Do you do Devers? Do you do J.D. Martinez third and then Devers fourth?
I think ultimately most managers like to go right, left, and you have, I think a right-handed hitter would hit third. Maybe it's Martinez to hit third.
Maybe.
But the problem is then you hit Mitch Moreland fourth. Do you hit Hanley Ramirez fourth?
I mean, yes.
The lineup is still not power laden, even though you added a huge bat in the middle of it.
Hey, listen,
they still have to hope that, you know, Betts and Bogarts both return to what they were 2 years ago. You have to, there are a lot of ifs all over this roster. So let's temper the enthusiasm, but they got what they needed. I think Martinez is going to hit third in this lineup. That's what makes sense to me.
I don't think that this is anything that's going to make the Red Sox fans freak out, but it is going to help them win more.
Yes,
I mean,
it makes them competitive. I mean, obviously, whether they win or lose depends more on their pitching rather than their hitting this year. But, you know, to control that Yankee lineup with the starting pitching they have, and if the bullpen is healthy, then that will help also.
Yeah, I mean, look, they needed power, they got power, right? They needed a middle of the order bat. They got a middle. They probably still need another one. As we just said, we're like, who's hitting fourth?
Yeah.
If Martinez is hitting fourth, then who's hitting third?
Sure.
So like, they're still power deficient.
Well, Chili Davis was the big problem, apparently.
Well, yeah, that's another. Yeah. Let's get to that in a second.
I want to talk about that in a second.
But they needed a bat like this. It was a very obvious fit. I'm a fan of the addition. I think, you know, the deal that they got, the discount that they got, I'm not sure, you know, based on what they expected in free agency, based on what Boris was, you know, telling John Heyman that he wanted to get.
Yeah.
It seems like a discount. It's still $25 million a year for the first 2 years. And if he plays really well, he's gone. So I don't know how much value the Red Sox get out of that necessarily. If he's really bad, then you're stuck with him for 5 years and $110 million. So I think the deal is fine. I don't think it's a major heist or anything, but it's a good deal. $25 million a year for a power bat sounds about right. And I don't honestly care about the money. I really don't.
Yeah.
John Henry was below the luxury tax last year. John Henry, for as far as I care, owes us from last year. So if he has to dip into the luxury tax, I really don't care. It's his money. It doesn't bother me. I don't think that the luxury tax going over 237 million, whatever it is that punitive, moving down 10 spots in the draft or whatever? I don't care about any of that. They needed a power bat, and they got one. So, good. They needed one last year. They finally got one a year later. Right, right. They probably still need another one.
But the most important part of this is there is an opt-out that's possible. And the reason why that is good is that you got guys like Salen Betts that are going to come due in about 2 or 3 years. You have Pomerantz who comes due after this year.
But if he's good enough to opt out, that's not going to be an easy call.
I understand.
You know what I mean? Like, no, he's not going to suck and then opt out. He's going to be really good to opt out.
Obviously. But the other part of the problem is you have to make choices in 2 or 3 years. And the contract is front-loaded. You're going to pay less for those last 2 or 3 seasons. That might help you pay $30 million for Betts or $30 million for Sale, both of which you need back because there's no one in the system that's going to replace them, and any free agent is going to cost at least that much, if not more, to replace them.
All right, when we get back, we got to get to this press conference that was awesomely awkward with John Henry and Tom Werner with the press. Just some delusional things being thrown out there.
Yeah.
I got to give it to the press down at spring training this season. They've been excellent. They've been asking all the right questions. They've been agitators. It's been fun. Like, at least it's been entertaining hearing these guys answer some of these questions. So we will do that right when we get back into this.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Toucher and Rich. Adam Jones in this morning for Fred and it was the one time a year that they roll out John Henry, and Tom Werner was out there yesterday answering questions from the crowd, and it was a
Let's go Red Sox.
It was an amazing.
Let's go Red Sox.
Go Red Sox.
The press conference was a lot funnier before they actually made the J.D. Martinez move, because it was really fun. I mean, they sat there stone-faced and tried to tell us that everything was great. I mean, you had John Henry saying what he said, then Tom Werner, every time he was asked a question, he just
Harpo strikes again.
He'd honk his horn and just kind of just look at John Henry, and he'd go, all right, he'd pat him on the head. So here's John Henry being asked about what are the changes this team has made.
From my perspective, I think that people have talked about we haven't made a lot of changes from last year, but in my mind, we've made significant changes to address, I think, some of the things that were brought up. I do think we had issues last year and we've addressed those issues.
Okay, well, I mean, at the time, you know, if you're going to sit there and praise Farrell, which they did, and they said he was awesome, and they said there were problems and we've made changes, you're like, well, what have you done? You know, tell me what are the differences? Like, what significant moves have you made that you can sell to the Red Sox fan base? And the one thing that he said, which kind of made me go, sounds like you're throwing someone under the bus unnecessarily, was this comment.
We'd have more power if we had. We would have had significant power last year if we'd have had a different approach. That's, my opinion. It may not be true, but I think we have a very good offense.
Now, Adam, am I wrong in drawing a conclusion that he thinks that the major problem with the offense was Chili Davis?
No. I think that's pretty clear what he's doing. He's throwing the whole coaching staff under the bus. There was another point where he's like, well, look at all the changes we made on the coaching staff. And again, this is before J.D. Martinez signed.
Yeah.
So everybody's kind of scratching their heads going, well, what changes had happened? They've brought back only Dana Lavangi. Every other coach is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes it sound like, oh, this is this massive sea change. So what? So Chili Davis, because he told the guys to keep your head down on the fastball or didn't do that?
Never swing at the first pitch.
Yeah, that's why the offense sucked last year.
Right.
Who was the hitting coach the year before?
I'm assuming
Chili
it's Chili Davis.
And they were the best offense in baseball.
And I'm assuming that he had no problem at that point.
Yeah,
so they were doing so well.
40 more home runs 2 years ago. Biggest difference was you didn't have David Ortiz in the middle of the lineup. That was the difference.
No, John, the reason that your offense sucked is because you were afraid of the luxury tax. You were afraid to spend your money.
Yeah.
And there was no middle of the order presence, as Wallach just said, to replace David Ortiz. It's not Chili Davis's fault.
The problem was that's so
weaselly by a billion-dollar owner to blame the hitting coach instead of spending his own money. Like, that's such a fraudulent comment.
Edwin Encarnacion was sitting there in early February, sitting there.
For cheaper money than
J.D.
Martinez.
City. How much cheaper? It was like $50 million cheaper.
Well, he's 3 years, $60
million. Yeah, $50 million cheaper. You would have saved money and by signing Encarnacion.
And you would have actually had a power bat. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And on top of that, like, it was just all around strange because, you know, this is like one of the few times the reporters are allowed to sit down and ask these guys questions. So there were a lot of topics that really were news stories from 6 months ago that no one's been able to get an answer from. Like the whole Yawkey Way street name situation that was going down. Many people saying that, you know, Yawkey's got a history of there being racism. So there was talk about them changing the name. So one of the questions that was asked by Dan Shaughnessy is, could you explain to your fans the objection to the Yawkey street name? And Henry says, no, I think I've already covered that. And Shaughnessy goes, I don't remember you ever talking about it. And Henry goes, I was quoted in the other newspaper. And he goes, okay, well, could you share it with all of us? And Henry goes, what my objections are? No. I'd really rather talk about baseball and spring training. So Shaughnessy says, but this is the only chance we get to talk to you. Is that changing the name something that the club is actively engaged in? And he goes, it is something the club is engaged in. Okay, there you go. Thanks. We truly appreciate it. Then Tom Werner said, and he gave him a Werther's original out of his pocket and said, good boy there, Tommy.
Tom Werner, almost a commissioner of Major League Baseball, yeah, by the
way. Let's go Red Sox. Let's go Red Sox.
Well, Major League Baseball did put in a couple of new rules yesterday to hopefully change the pace of play. They announced that they're going to start with teams being limited to 6 mound visits per 9 innings, excluding pitching changes. The only thing
problem solved.
Well, yeah, I guess that's going to take care of everything. Well, listen, I actually don't have a problem with that because somebody at least wrote it down. I don't know what the penalty is if somebody accidentally runs to the mound and, you know, what do you do?
You got to take the pitcher out.
Is it that drastic?
I think so. Yes.
It's
like a second mound visit during the inning. Remember, there was a Mattingly when he was managing the Dodgers.
I remember
went out there and accidentally stepped on the mound a second time, even though he made a mistake and turned around and went back. They made him take out the pitcher.
I
think that would be the penalty.
That seems pretty drastic.
If you go over the limit.
Okay. All right. Maybe you send the runner to first.
No, I think you have to take out the pitcher.
Okay.
I just love how they didn't even put
that in there.
This isn't going to speed up the game at all.
I know.
It has no bearing on the game whatsoever.
Well, especially if no one knows the rule. They're like, wait, what happens when... Wait, that's the seventh one. What happens?
Sure.
What do we do?
I guess you get scolded.
That'll slow it down a lot.
Right. Yeah, get a nice scolding.
That's a good point. There'll be like a 5-minute delay.
Yeah.
What happens?
Nobody knows. It's not written down. I looked all night yesterday. I was like trying to figure out, okay, well, what's the penalty? Who knows?
Yeah, that's the seventh time you got to take out the pitcher.
Also, between the inning and reliever breaks, AKA the commercial breaks, they're going to be reduced by 20 seconds. Nice round number. Woo! So there you go.
There you go.
So that saves you.
What if the game
180 seconds per regular game?
Unless the final score is like 9-8, in which case none of it matters.
What do you mean?
I mean,
well,
the game,
you save 20 seconds every half inning.
The game is still going to be 3 hours and 30 minutes long if there's extra scoring.
It'd be like 3 hours 28.
Okay.
Pitcher warm-ups will now be timed.
Okay.
And there will not be a pitch clock. So it just seems
yet. We're really building towards that.
That's right. Listen, yeah,
we'll get there someday. Yeah.
Remind me again why he's so scared to institute a pitch clock.
I have no idea.
Why won't Rob Manfred institute a pitch clock? Something
the union, because the union won't let him.
Yeah, the players will go nuts.
But why?
Because it throws off their routine.
They have no bargain. That's their only bargaining chip. You can't bargain. That's the only bargaining chip in the next CBA. Is we don't want this, so we're not going to just give it to the owners for nothing. They need something back.
For a pitch clock.
Yes.
That's smart.
What do they need back? What do they need back? I don't know. A bigger piece of the pie from ownership?
They're going to get money out of this?
Yes. That's what I would want if I were them. You want to change this?
Pitch clock.
Yes.
That's insane.
You want to change my routine and speed me up? Yes, I want something for it. I'm not just going to give it to you out of the goodness of my own heart.
All right. Well.